Hello, hello, and welcome to this very first episode of Poly Am Are We, the podcast where we take an intimate look at polyamory and ethical non-monogamy from a male emotional perspective. I'm your host, Carl, and I'm excited to embark on this journey of understanding, empathy, and growth with you. In today's episode, we're going to dive into the complexities of polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, exploring what they are, why they matter, and some of the hurdles that can arise within these relationship structures. I suppose first things first is a bit of background on myself. As mentioned, my name is Carl. I've been married now to a wonderful, amazing woman for just going on 10 years. August will be our anniversary. Woohoo! And it's been an interesting journey, to say the least. Of those 10 years, we're touching on just about 4 years being open, polyamorous, ethical, non-monogamous. And I think through those last few years, we've actually grown a lot closer than we were while we were doing the traditional thing. We began traditionally, we were dating for, we met 12 years ago, we were dating for 2 years, got married then, and we did the whole, we did a civil wedding in Ireland and then a big church wedding in Mexico where she's originally from. And we were of the mindset then, the both of us, that this was the way things were done. Though somewhere in the back of my head, if I got to be completely honest, I was wondering, is this the be-all and end-all? And I remember when I was a child even, I'd ask my mother, why? Why is there only one person for another person? And she told me that's just how it is. And I don't think that ever really sat well with me. Because I think in most aspects of my life, I've been quite non-traditional. I'd always like to push the bar or do things my own way, do things a bit different than the status quo, than the norm, rebel in my own little way. So our story basically comes from while we were married in those first few years, it was great, fantastic. And my wife, she was, when we got married, she was a bit of a bigger girl. She got gastric surgery and began to lose weight then. And through that, she noticed guys were beginning to check her out more than they ever had before. My own backstory was, well, throughout my whole of my 20s, I was a raging alcoholic. I'd be drinking a bottle of vodka a day, nearly every day for 10 years. So neither of us did the traditional dating thing throughout the whole of our 20s. And there was one point when we were living in Mexico at the time, and it had come up in conversation somehow about some girl sitting on my knee. And I remember vividly her saying, well, I wouldn't mind that. And I was like, hold on a second. And we started talking, and then we realized we were having that conversation about, we both really felt the same, that love is a lot bigger and can be a lot more than what society just deems it should be, where one person for one person and one person being your be-all, end-all, your best friend, your ultimate confidant, your muse. And through that, we both started doing our research. COVID hit, so we had plenty of time to be, you know, looking at all different forms of media, reading a lot of publications, watching a lot of videos, and ultimately talking through everything and seeing where each of us were. Because the most important part to us was, or still is, it's about maintaining our marriage, our connection, while also being free and independent to explore different facets of our own lives. I've always maintained that if traditional one-to-one was supposed to be for our species, then biologically we would have some kind of an off switch when it came to when you found your one, you would never be attracted even slightly to another human being, which, as we all know, or the most of us know, that's pretty impossible. And the sad thing about modern society, I feel, is that although some couples may want to have this big conversation, or one member or both, it's just such a big and difficult conversation to broach. One of those things that a lot of people feel is better off left unspoken, which then breeds a lot of resentment, a lot of anger, and ultimately a lot of beautiful relationships breaking down just for not being able to talk about what's deep down inside of a person. A lot of friends I've spoken to who are part of the lifestyle, they would believe that they were born polyamorous. And I believe that myself, that I was born in such a way where I didn't really see the traditional route as being the one and the only route. And so far on this journey, it served me quite well. It served Nash quite well. And it's been an interesting exploration in terms of getting to know myself more, getting to understand my emotional depth, what makes me tick, what are my triggers, my boundaries, what really upsets me, what I can learn to live with, how to deal with jealousy, how to deal with resentments, and just how to be an all-round better person. I think it was in the book More Than Two I read, where one of the main tenets is to treat people like people and not to treat people like objects, which I try to live by in everything I do and every new connection I form. So let's take a look. What is polyamory? What is ethical non-monogamy? So traditionally, using the word traditionally in a non-traditional sense, it's great. Polyamory is the practice of engaging in consensual romantic relationships with multiple partners simultaneously, with the knowledge and consent of everyone involved. That seems pretty straightforward. But then we can also step into the whole territory of non-ethical non-monogamy, which is a different kettle of fish altogether. But I'll touch on that in a later episode. So ethical non-monogamy, on the other hand, encompasses various relationship styles where individuals may have multiple partners with the consent of all parties. These relationship models prioritize honesty, communication, and mutual respect. Harping back to what I spoke on there a bit earlier on about treating people like people. Just treat people with the same emotional candor that you'd want to receive yourself. That's in a few different books, I think. Some of them religious-y ones. I'm not sure. I'm not really into that. So why would somebody choose polyamory or ethical non-monogamy? That's a big question. And for many men, these relationship structures offer opportunities for deeper emotional connections, personal growth, and freedom from the constraints of traditional monogamy. There's the book The Ethical Slut by Dosie Easton and Janet W. Hardy. Polyamory is not a solution to relationship problems. It's a relationship style that amplifies the strength and exposes the weaknesses in a relationship. However, navigating polyamorous relationships is not always easy, and I personally have had my own share of ups and downs, roundabouts, circles, confusion. It can be a minefield. One of the hurdles that can arise, obviously, is jealousy. Despite our best intentions, jealousy can rear its head when we fear losing partners to others. For myself, and looking into this, what I have come to learn about how I operate, and it's something I've spoke about with other lifestyle people, in terms of jealousy, is personally, I don't see jealousy in itself as an emotion. I see jealousy as a reactionary to the emotions I'm feeling. So let's say I'm feeling angry or lonely or any other multitude of emotions. Jealousy is the wording put on that. So let's say my wife goes out on a date and I'm sitting at home doing nothing and I haven't had a date in a few months, let's say, and she's had a few dates and she's getting on great with new connections. At some point, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling jealous. And then I stop to analyze it. Why am I feeling jealous? Where are these feelings coming from? And it's usually an internal thing. It's something to do solely with me. Because I want nothing more than her happiness. I want nothing more than, as long as she's safe and happy and content, I'm content. So I would analyze myself and I'd be thinking, okay, where does this come from? What is this feeling of jealousy? And in that moment, it would come from loneliness. So I'm sitting there, I'm watching a movie, I've ordered a Burger King, stuff in my face, and be like, yeah, I wish she was here to share this moment with. Not that I'd ever want to take away from the moment she's having with a wonderful person. She may be out having a wonderful meal or eating a burger as well and enjoying time with another human being. So it's not so much that I'm jealous of her. I'm jealous so much of the situation that I don't have someone in that moment to be sharing this delicious burger with. There's another book, Opening Up, by Tristan Taormino, and that highlights that jealousy is a natural emotion, but it's how we respond to it that matters. By fostering open communication and addressing the root causes of jealousy, we can navigate these feelings with compassion and understanding, and that could not be more true in my belief. At moments when I have felt jealous or I felt resentful, the simplest course, and it's easy to say, is communication. Open and honest communication, which can be one of the hardest things to do. To be truly open with someone, to be fearless, to be open to them, and to be completely vulnerable as a male is a scary thing. Really scary. And it takes a lot of coaxing for myself. It takes a lot of coaxing it out of me at times as to what the root cause of it. And there's been times where I've been feeling one way deep inside, but not being able to communicate it and lashing out in other ways. As in finding another thing to gripe about, to give out about, rather than the core issue. And it takes a lot of courage. It takes a hell of a lot of courage to be able to face up to whatever's going on and speak candidly about, listen, I've been feeling lonely over XYZ, and I would hope that we could have a discussion about it so we can find some kind of a compromise so as we can both support each other along this path. Sometimes points aren't seen by the other as quickly as you would hope. That's where patience comes into it, because nobody is inside of your own head. Nobody understands your thoughts. You're the only person in control. Actually, the only thing you're ever in control of is your reaction to your emotions. You're not even in control of your emotions. It's how you react in a certain situation that can generally make all the difference. And then we have society. I love society. Okay, one of my favorite songs is Society by Eddie Vedder. It's just epic. If you've never heard it, go and listen to it. It is just fantastic. But anyway, society. So the societarial stigma and the misconceptions surrounding polyamory can pose significant obstacles. It was in The Ethical Slut. It reminds us that polyamory challenges deeply ingrained beliefs about love, commitment, and sexuality. Like, so the whole idea that there is one just for one. You will find the one person who will be your be-all, end-all, your everything, who will carry all of your emotional burdens, make you feel good when you're feeling down. That is such a big ask to put on another human being. a massive ask. And anyone who's able to do that for another human, I commend you. I think that is one of the most amazing things, the most empathetic things any one person can do for any other one person. The fact of the matter is that most people, whether you're in a committed relationship, whether it's family, friends, most people have their own shit to be getting on with. And although you in moments want people to be there and you want to feel like the center of attention, like everyone is there for you, everyone's there to help you in your time of need, the sad fact of the matter is that will rarely, rarely happen. People will be there for you when you need them. But to expect someone to be there for you all the time, 100% of the time, giving up what they need to be getting on with in their lives, is such a massive, massive ask of any human being. And I've come to learn that no matter what's going on with me internally, emotionally, I know that I'm able to speak up, but will I get the answers or the resolutions I need and want in that very moment? And probably not, because it takes taking the information I get and going and thinking on it and working through it and finding out, okay, well, how can I use this information to give me a better tomorrow? The ethical slut actually continues by advocating for greater visibility and educating others about the benefits of ethical non-monogamy. We can work towards a more inclusive and accepting society. And there's a lot to unpack in that alone, because there's so many times as well where if someone says, oh, I practice ethical non-monogamy, or we're polyamorous, or we're in an open relationship, a certain die is cast, a certain brush stroke, where most people, and it stands for all of human history, are scared of anything that threatens their own belief systems. And that can be seen in countless examples since the Homo sapiens started walking upright. Anything different from the tribal mentality can be seen as a threat. And that's understandable, because we're a tribal species. We survive through relying on others having the similar or the same point of view of ours, so as to propagate, so as to survive. Whereas when you step outside of that status quo, you're seeing as different, other, weird. And it can come with a lot of baggage, but then it's all about dealing with that understanding that everyone has an opinion. Their opinion does not reflect on the core person of who you are, your own core beliefs, your own ideas about how you feel society should or could be. But we still all got to live in this society, because right now, the way things are, we don't really have a choice. I mean, we all like running water. We all like transport systems. We all like having the internet. So it's one of those things where you can always have your own belief systems contrary to what the status quo is. But being able to act upon those is generally one of those things that would get you locked up. Luckily enough, we live in a society where these things, like polyamory, like open relationships, like any other swathe of different relationship structures, are now becoming far more socially accepted than they even were 10 years ago. And we're at a turning point where, yeah, if you think differently and you feel differently about how love works and how relationship structures could be, you're free to explore it without shame, without guilt, and without reprimand. So, as we come to wrap up this episode of PolyMRW, I just want to thank each of you for joining me on this exploration, and hoping for many, 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 many more open conversations to come. I'm planning to have a multitude of different guests on with me over the course of this podcast. mainly looking at the male emotional perspective, but that doesn't mean I won't have female guests on speaking on their own polyamorous journeys with their partners and how their partners react to certain situations and certain pitfalls that they've beheld, and even sharing a little more about the hurdles that myself and my wife have faced. It's, as I said earlier, it's been a very interesting journey so far, and this journey is only set to continue. Remember, these relationship structures, they may not be for everyone, so it's not about forcing the ideals down someone's throat. But by fostering open communication, addressing challenges and empathy, and prioritizing mutual respect above all, we can create fulfilling and sustainable connections with others. Thank you for listening. This is Carl, and I will talk to you again soon. Until then, love you lots.